consumption could quite rapidly go up to the level of a country like Argentina by the year 2027, just to power artificial intelligence alone. That doesn't include all other data centers that we use for basically cryptocurrency mining and everything else. So yeah, we see these energy demands are rapidly rising, and in a world where we have a limited renewable energy supply available, that just means that we are going to be using more of our backup energy source, which is fossil fuels.
Alex DeVries, we want to thank you so much for being with us, founder of Digeconomist, speaking to us from Amsterdam. Leona Morgan, DNA organizer with Don't Nuke the Climate, as well as Hall No. And Tim Judson, executive director of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, also part of Don't Nuke the Climate Coalition. Yes, we are broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit in Baku, Azerbaijan. We want to wish a very happy birthday to Ivan Incapié. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff. I'm Amy Goodman from Baku, Azerbaijan.
Topics like safe supply, safe consumption spaces, decriminalization, legalization, harm reduction, human rights, civil rights, and much more. Tune in and listen to Free Culture Radio on the third Wednesday of each month from 6:30 to 7 p.m. Pacific here on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM.
Support for Between the Covers comes from KBOO members and from Rose City Book Pub, located at 1329 Northeast Fremont in Portland, featuring meals, drinks, books, and more. Information at rosecitybookpub.com. KBOO.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Multnomah County considers a risk bonding requirement for CEI hub companies. Oregon ranks 43rd in the nation for home ownership. And intense winds up to 45 miles per hour hit the Willamette Valley tonight. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, November 19, 2024. I'm Eric Leuschner. Multnomah County Commissioners will consider new requirements for the oil and gas companies that operate in northwest Portland on the bank of the Willamette River. The tank farm there is called the Critical Energy Infrastructure Hub, or the CEI Hub, and it stores 90% of all liquid fuels for the whole state. It's also on a liquefaction zone, an area where the soil is expected to liquefy in the event of a serious Cascadia subduction zone earthquake. Many of the tanks are over 70 years old, with some built over a century ago. All of that poses a serious risk to Portland's river and residents, especially those in the Linton and St. John's neighborhoods. In a worst-case scenario, that could put the county on the hook for billions to clean up a spill. Later this week, Multnomah County Commissioners will hear an ordinance that would require the owners of those facilities to provide financial assurances for the costs and damages that could come from a catastrophic spill. Advocates say that's critically important, not just so taxpayers don't end up footing the bill, but also so that aid work can move quickly in the event of a disaster. Scientist Catherine Muller provided public comment on this last week, saying, quote, "Requiring financial assurances from fuel companies is not a new concept. No one thinks twice about requiring renters to pay a security deposit to cover damages that they may cause in their rental unit," end quote. The ordinance will get a first reading at this week's County Commission meeting on Thursday, November 21st. Oregon ranks 43rd in the nation for home ownership, and a new coalition has formed to address the problem. The Unlocking Home Ownership Coalition is submitting 7 proposals for the 2025 Oregon legislative session. The plans include investing in new affordable housing and providing financial help to first-time homebuyers, especially people of color who have faced systemic barriers in home ownership. Isabel Charlet reports.
With housing prices nearly doubling in the last 10 years, the number of Oregonians who can afford to buy a home without assistance has dwindled. A new coalition has formed to change that. The Unlocking Home Ownership Coalition is made up of more than 20 Oregon organizations and is submitting plans to the legislature to help address this problem. The plans include investing in affordable housing, assistance for first-time homebuyers, and closing the 15% home ownership gap for communities of color. Habitat for Humanity of Oregon is leading the coalition. Shannon Vilhauer is Habitat's executive director.
Some Oregonians have just done all the right things, right? Worked on credit repair, saving for a down payment, and yet interest rates are high, wages have not kept pace with home prices, and sometimes we all need a hand up to enter this first-time home ownership market.
She says people of color, especially African Americans, have a long history of being excluded from home ownership in Oregon. The state constitution originally banned Black people from owning land. Some were also denied benefits through the GI Bill or were subject to redlining into the 1990s. Vilhauer says Portland is an obvious example of systemic racism around housing.
That's our city where we did have redlining, where a highway was built through generational African-American foundational wealth, and that wealth was actively stripped from communities.
Owning a home means having long-term, stable housing costs and is often more affordable over time than renting. Along with the financial benefits, Vilhauer adds, studies show that kids who grow up in homes their parents own are more likely to graduate from high school and go to college and are more likely to own their own homes.
So when we talk about really generational opportunity and this springboard to being a fully contributing and supported, right, member of the community, we really think that home ownership is a critical piece of that puzzle.
Heading into the 2025 session, Vilhauer is optimistic that with the number of state legislators making affordable housing a top priority, the coalition's proposals will move forward. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Intense winds up to 45 miles an hour are forecasted for the Willamette Valley Tuesday night. That's thanks to a bomb cyclone storm brewing in the Pacific Ocean. Bomb cyclones happen when the core of a storm drops pressure rapidly, which means high wind speeds. A strong bomb cyclone can produce gusts as high as 95 miles per hour, but this one won't be as bad for the Willamette Valley and the Portland area. For holiday travel watchers, fear not. The storm is expected to weaken by Wednesday morning. The same storm is causing a rare blizzard warning for the Washington Cascades through Wednesday morning. For regions of the Washington Cascades above 2,500 feet, forecasters expect 4 to 12 inches of snow and winds up to 60 miles per hour. New nuclear technology is being touted as a renewable solution for growing energy demands, including a proposal for a project in Washington State backed by Amazon. But critics say this technology is unproven and a distraction from solar and wind projects. Eric Tegedoff has more.
New nuclear power options are getting a lot of attention, but analysts say these unproven options could distract from readily available renewable energy options. Big tech companies with growing energy demands from technology like artificial intelligence have recently announced support for new nuclear efforts. That includes Amazon's support for a plan in Washington State. The plans involve technology called small modular reactors, which are smaller than typical nuclear reactors. However, Dennis Wamsted with the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis says this technology likely wouldn't come online until 2030 or later in the U.S.
It's a great marketing tool. There's no actual there yet. There are no operating small modular reactors in the United States or in Europe. There's one or two in Russia and one in China.
Wamsted recently analyzed what he calls the hype surrounding small modular reactors. He says these projects may be distant energy solutions, but also distract from solar, wind, and geothermal plants, which are already proven to work. Wamsted says tech companies should be applauded for their clean energy goals, which are among the most aggressive of any industry. But when it comes to small modular reactors, there are a lot of hurdles to starting up, including regulatory barriers.
The safety license is given to you by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which has a process. It is a relatively time-consuming process. It may be more time-consuming for companies like X Energy because their reactors have never been licensed before.
Wamstead says while we could wait a decade for small modular reactors to produce energy for the first time, there are solar projects, for instance, that have gone from announcement to commercial operation in 2 years.
Focus on the availability now of renewables and continue to fund the SMRs, but be upfront about the fact that they're not a solution for the rapid demand growth that we're going through in the United States right now.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Eric Hovde concedes Wisconsin senator's race. The proposed Department of Government Efficiency looking to slash one-third of federal spending, and the U.S. imposes sanctions on groups supporting West Bank settlements. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. Are these actions to deceive and mislead voters strengthening and protecting our democracy? Any fair-minded person would say no. Wisconsin Republican Senate candidate Eric Hovde is conceding he lost to incumbent Democrat Tammy Baldwin by 1%. He says he's considering a recount because perceived irregularities with Milwaukee's absentee ballots and Democratic support for far-right and libertarian candidates cost him the race. Educators are watching to see if President-elect Donald Trump will follow Project 2025 and eliminate the Department of Education and its K-12 funding. The Tennessee legislature is studying what that would mean. Alexa Barajas-Clark with Education Trust Tennessee says the loss of federal money would be hardest on the students who need it most.
They could not guarantee that they would continue to receive the funding and the necessary support and intervention and the services that they would need to receive an equitable education.
According to the Washington Post, Trump's choice for Secretary of Defense paid a woman in 2017 to silence a charge of sexual assault. Fox News host Pete Hegseth reportedly paid the woman an undisclosed amount, after which she signed a non-disclosure agreement. Meanwhile, the House Ethics Committee will meet Wednesday to discuss releasing its report on Trump's pick for Attorney General. Former Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz was investigated for drug use and sex trafficking minors. Tech CEO Elon Musk and businessman slash former presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy are slated to co-chair a proposed federal Department of Government Efficiency. The two say they want to cut out a third of federal spending to deal with the deficit. Previous budget slashing efforts have failed. The three biggest items, Social Security, Medicare, and the military, are politically popular and millions depend on them. One big program that could be easier to cut is Medicaid, which serves low-income families. Trump's allies in Congress have previously targeted Medicaid's expansion under the Affordable Care Act. Larry Leavitt with KFF says that would force states to raise costs.
For the ACA, simply letting enhanced financial aid expire after next year would result in big out-of-pocket premium increases, reduced enrollment, and more people uninsured.
Environmental groups say new leadership at the EPA is likely to change state policies. Sam Carpenter with the Hoosier Environmental Council says Indiana's progress on coal ash and water quality could be undone.
The EPA had recently come out with guidelines that required those to be cleaned up. There's similar things with coal-fired power plants where we still rely quite a bit on our coal power generation, which is dirty.
The U.S. is imposing sanctions on groups the administration says support illegal Jewish West Bank settlements and encourage violence against Palestinians. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller says the sanctions freeze their assets and block Americans from doing business with them.
These sanctions have targeted an ever-broadening array of actors, from individuals to organizations, for their roles in the escalating violence and instability. There is no justification for extremist violence against civilians.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on an innovative mental health and addiction program at McGill University in Montreal. At 6 o'clock, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be rainy with a wind advisory in effect until Wednesday morning, with overnight low of 37 degrees. Tomorrow's weather is expected to be cloudy with a high of 52. Today in history, in 1863, U.S. President Abraham Lincoln delivers the Gettysburg Address at the dedication ceremony for the military cemetery at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. It's seen as one of the most influential statements on the American national purpose. The quote of the day is from another U.S. president, James Garfield, born this day in 1831. He said, quote, "I am trying to do two things, dare to be a radical and not a fool, which is a matter of no small difficulty." President Biden created the most national monuments in a single term since Jimmy Carter. But environmental advocates and tribes want him to do more. With that story, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Joe Biden has created more national monuments in a single term than any president since Jimmy Carter left office in 1981. Tribes and environmental advocates are pressing him to do even more, the Mountain West News Bureau's Rachel Cohen reports.
After President Donald Trump shrunk the Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante monuments in Utah, Biden's first step was restoring them.
And because of that, he really started thinking about monuments right from the get-go. So you see much more activity than you see usually during the first term.
Justin Padeau is a professor at the University of Arizona Law School who worked in the Biden and Obama administrations. He says Biden has had a particular focus on monuments proposed by tribes. That includes Avikwame, established last year in Nevada. It's a site sacred to the Fort Mojave Indian tribe, among others. Before leaving the White House, Biden could designate more national monuments. Local campaigns are advocating for protection of the Owyhee Canyon lands on the border of Oregon and Idaho, and the Dolores Canyons in southwest Colorado. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Rachel Cohen.
The Aleutic Museum received about $150,000 to revamp the Koniag Cultural Library. The grant comes as it's finishing construction on its new building. As KMXT's Brian Venois reports, staff say it's good timing to have even more to show off at its future grand reopening.
The Aleutic Museum has been closed for over a year for an expansion project to nearly double its size. Museum officials plan to display more items from its collections as well as feature more art from contemporary culture bearers. But now with this grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Sciences, the museum will make it easier than ever to access its library, too.
In the past, we had a library. I don't think anyone knew that.
That's Amanda Lancaster, the museum's curator of collections. Since 2018, the library has served as the official tribal library of Koniag, Kodiaks and Regional Native Corporation.
It was in the basement. It was very inaccessible. You had to make an appointment. You had to have a staff member with you just because it was in the basement and, you know, sort of a more of a staff space.
The library features thousands of printed materials, hundreds of audiovisual items, and well over 10,000 photos as part of the collection for people to research Aleutic culture. The new funding will help the museum pay for renovations for a more friendly library space. Lancaster says they're aiming to have matching shelving units, furniture for a seating area, and computers for research. Patrons won't need appointments or staff supervision just to be in there. They'll just need to check in at the front desk and use the library at their leisure.
We're just hoping that it will make it much more accessible, that people will want to come and use it.
While the new money won't cover new acquisitions, it could make room for future donations.
But it's going to be much larger and much more spacious and space to sit and read, and I think it's just going to be a really nice space.
It's also a reason to recatalog and reorganize all of those resources.
I'm just really excited to have one sort of dedicated project where we make sure everything's in the right space. You know, we have this genealogical resources because that's something people have asked for over and over and over again.
After the renovations, the grant will also pay for an outreach effort to solicit comments on how to make the library as useful as possible. The Aleutic Museum is set to have a grand reopening in May. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
California will remove the SQ word, a derogatory term for an indigenous woman, from more than 30 sites. The state's Natural Resources Agency announced last week, the LA Times reports. In 2022, Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill into law requiring the term to be removed from all geographic features and place names in the state. It follows a similar move by U.S. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, who declared the term derogatory in 2021 and established a process to remove names from federal lands. Renaming in California is expected to take place in early 2025. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Financially stressed managers are more likely to be abusive toward their subordinates, particularly if the boss is a man. That's according to new research from Colorado State University and the University of New Mexico. Eric Galatas has the details.
Researchers at Colorado State University have been able to link the economic stress experienced by 78% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck to behavior that is bad for workers and company bottom lines. Report co-author Keaton Fletcher says people who supervise other workers at all management levels are unleashing their economic frustrations on their direct reports.
When they feel financially stressed, they are more likely to be abusive, berating or belittling, demeaning, sometimes yelling or cursing at subordinates.
The findings, published in the Journal of Occupational Health Psychology, show that financial stress is experienced by bosses regardless of their salary levels, and that men are more likely than women to be abusive towards subordinates. The research was done in collaboration with the Anderson School of Management at the University of New Mexico. When bosses can't pay their bills, Fletcher says they feel like they're not in control of their lives. Bullying a subordinate is one way to try and regain a sense of personal agency. Gender expectations may also play a role. Fletcher says women are more likely to be punished socially for aggressive behavior than men.
Both men and women feel this lack of control in response to financial stress. And the data show that men are more likely to engage in those abusive behaviors when they have this feeling of a lack of control.
Companies that tolerate abusive bosses are vulnerable to costly lawsuits. And Fletcher says even workers who don't report abuse or sue can hurt a company's bottom line. They're more likely to show up late for work, be less productive, steal, or talk badly about the company to other people.
And then they're also more likely to quit. And it is so expensive to replace employees. Pretty much across the board, having abusive supervisors just is financially costly to organizations.
This is Eric Galatas for the Colorado News Connection.
Banks, financial consultants, and educational systems often stress to Americans that they need to be smart about their money so they can be self-sufficient. But what about the social impacts that come with financial decisions? One North Dakota expert says financial interdependency needs to be a part of the conversation. Mike Moen explains.
The holiday season is here, and households in North Dakota and elsewhere might encounter sensitive conversations about lending money to a loved one in need. There's emerging research about removing stigma and embracing mutual financial support. Higher housing costs, student loan debts, and other factors have forced more generations of U.S. families to live under the same roof. However, the University of North Dakota's Jeffrey Anvari Clark says there's still a narrative about rugged individualism and that it's taboo to ask for help in covering expenses. He says families need to feel comfortable in having these talks.
There is a balance, I think, between having good independence and taking care of yourself, but there does also come a time when you need to receive help from others.
Anvari Clark has led research on the topic of financial interdependence, noting it looks different for each family as well as many cultures around the world. In America, he thinks financial literacy should stress the importance of saving money to help others in your life and not just building your own nest egg. But he acknowledges the need to set clear boundaries because too much support can strain these relationships. Anvari Clark says another hurdle to overcome is not letting the person asking for help to carry a lot of shame for past financial mistakes. He sees it as a learning opportunity.
I'm taking this sense of regret and I'm doing something positive with it to improve my chances moving forward.
GoFundMe campaigns are a popular way for people to raise money for someone in a bind. But Anvari Clark says it doesn't just have to be a financial donation. At the community level, he sees households buying groceries in bulk to save money or getting creative with childcare needs as ways to embrace this mindset of mutual assistance. This is Mike Moen for Prairie News Service.
The Bird Alliance of Oregon will build a new wildlife hospital and nature sanctuary in Northeast Portland. It's across Northeast 82nd Avenue from McDaniel High School on the site of a former landfill. Their current site in Forest Park in Northwest Portland is too small for their needs. They plan to build a wildlife hospital, a 2-acre solar array, and walking trails to connect the surrounding community to native habitat restoration. Stuart Wells is the director of Bird Alliance. Wells told OPB that he hopes to offer internships to McDaniel High School students at the Wildlife Rehab Hospital, which could be available to current freshman students before they graduate. As any hope of a ceasefire in Gaza fades, international observers are condemning Israel's attacks on civilians. The Biden administration is sitting on its hands, and the Israeli leadership awaits Donald Trump with expectations of full support of its actions. Now we go to global citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. People inside and outside Gaza are losing hope of relief from the humanitarian crisis there. Israel's deadly assaults on Gaza are being almost universally condemned by international observers. The peace process looks dead, and the Biden administration continues to sit on its hands. The Israeli leadership is happily awaiting Donald Trump's return to power. UNICEF's executive director, Catherine Russell, in a report on November 2nd, cites, quote, the indiscriminate strikes on civilians in the Gaza Strip, as well as attacks on her own staff. Her report says, quote, the Israeli military has obligations to distinguish between military and civilian objectives, be proportional, and take all feasible precautions in attacks. Yet these principles are being flouted over and over again, leaving tens of thousands of children killed, injured, and deprived of essential services needed for survival. Other UN agencies and non-governmental organizations support that observation. CNN reports, for example, quote, in a detailed report verifying fatalities in Gaza in the first 6 months of the conflict, the United Nations Human Rights Office said it found close to 70% to be children and women, indicating a systematic violation of the fundamental principles of international humanitarian law on the part of the Israeli military. The continuation of these attacks demonstrates an apparent indifference to the death of civilians and the impact of the means and methods of warfare selected, the report said. That same office said it found a pattern showing, quote, high numbers of babies and young children, women, older persons, and families killed together in residential buildings. Human Rights Watch accuses Israel of, quote, massive deliberate forced displacement of Palestinian civilians in Gaza since October 2023. These are war crimes and crimes against humanity, says HRW, adding, quote, there is no plausible imperative military reason to justify Israel's mass displacement of nearly all of Gaza's population, often multiple times. Rather than ensuring civilian security, military evacuation orders have caused grave harm. Jan Egeland, a seasoned diplomat and peacemaker who heads a Norwegian relief organization, recently visited Gaza and spoke with PBS. He said, quote, I'm really shattered by seeing how humanity has been trampled upon through Gaza. More than 2 million people are trapped in one of the most confined areas on the planet, and they're under the most intense and indiscriminate bombardment by enormous Israeli Air Force. And they're using indiscriminate bombs provided by the United States. This will come to haunt Israel and the United States because this is so much against every principle of civilization and of law, unquote. As for Israel's denial of these charges, Egeland says they're lying, quote, they don't want independent witnesses. We who are there, who are independent, neutral, impartial, all UN agencies, all Red Cross agencies, all non-governmental agencies, American, European, etc., we are unanimous in that Israel is deliberately starving the population and having an indiscriminate, excessive warfare that are killing thousands of women and children. Thus, we are probably farther from a ceasefire today than we were a year ago. Qatar has announced its withdrawal from negotiations. It had been serving, along with Egypt, as a mediator between Israel and Hamas. The Qataris have concluded that there is insufficient willingness from either side, with the mediation efforts becoming more about politics and PR rather than a serious attempt to secure peace, save the hostages and Palestinian civilians, said a diplomatic source to CNN. As a consequence, the Hamas political office no longer serves its purpose. For its part, the United States has failed in its humanitarian duties. A Washington Post investigation finds that Israel has not complied with a U.S. warning to improve its delivery of aid to Gaza in 1 month. Don't expect the Biden administration to follow through with sanctions on Israel. It continues to sit on its hands. The Post also cites the Biden administration's failure to investigate illegal use of U.S. arms in Gaza. The Biden administration, says the article, has received nearly 500 reports alleging that Israel used U.S.-supplied weapons for attacks that caused unnecessary harm to civilians in the Gaza Strip, but it has failed to comply with its own policies and laws regarding swift investigations of such claims. Once Donald Trump takes office, expect all talk about Palestinian rights, civilian death tolls, a two-state solution, illegal use of U.S. weapons, and Israeli violations of international law to disappear too. With Trump's win, says Israel's finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, the time has come to annex parts of the West Bank. After all, Trump has told Netanyahu to take care of business quickly, which is music to the Israeli government's ears. That's like a gang leader's order to his henchmen to get rid of the bodies. Netanyahu is doing just that. I'm Mel Gertow for the Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, November 19, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertow and David Rosenberg. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Isabel Charlet, Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Galatas, Suzanne Potter, and Mike Moan. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.